Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage. Enterprise.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Captain Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Red alert.
Photon torpedoes, fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage. Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And to make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Hailing frequencies open, sir.
And we're back. Okay. I love the new theme. Who's loving the new theme? Brian, are you loving the new theme?
Yes.
Everybody's loving the new theme. It's second journey. It's its second show. So it's what does that make it? It makes it the Corviknight maneuver of that new theme. So we love it. And It's fun to hear, and I'm grooving right here in my seat here in Deck 44. Welcome to another episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I am your host, Jordan Hoffman. You can tweet at me at @jhoffman. You can go to Facebook at facebook.com/engage, the official Star Trek podcast. Is that how long the Facebook name is? Is it Engage, the official Star Trek podcast? That's so long. It is. It's facebook.com/engage, the official Star Trek podcast. That's the Facebook page. That's life. Sometimes, listen, some of us are blessed with a long Facebook name. You know, that's just how it is. You should go to that because, by the way, this episode that we're launching, if you listen to these relatively live and on time, you should know that this is the last show, before my favorite holiday of the year, Halloween. It's almost Halloween. And what I want to see from you, my faithful listeners, I want to see pictures of you in Star Trek Halloween costumes. I want you to send them to me, send them to the show. I want you to take the picture of you dressed as Sexy Riker. I want to see your Sexy Riker pics, or your Sexy Seven of Nine pics, or your Sexy Geordi LaForge pics. Sexy Worf. I want to see your Sexy Worf pics. Send your Sexy Worf pics. Bat lefts out for Sexy Worf. Send them to, you can put them right on my wall at facebook.com/engage the official Star Trek podcast. And believe me, you may not think that your Worf pics are sexy. I think they're sexy. I think they're very sexy, and I want to see them. You can tweet them at me, too, at Jay Hoffman, or just use the hashtag #EngagePod. And about that Facebook page, listen, I have been asleep at the wheel. We used to put up more behind the scenes stuff, some videos. We haven't done it as much as we used to. I'm going to get back on the train. That's my pledge to you, my friends. I apologize. Last week's show was terrific. We had guests of a lifetime, guests we've always wanted, Denise and Michael Okuda. If you didn't listen to last week's show yet, it's right back there. If you were looking at your play.it or your iTunes or whatever the heck you use to stream. We had two great Star Trek insiders. Michael Okuda has been involved in Star Trek in 100 different capacities since Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. And Denise has been involved since, I believe she said Star Trek VI, although technically she was involved in Star Trek The Motion Picture because she was, as we talked about, an extra on that famous day when they got all the fans together. And they've been working ever since, and behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, on the side of the scenes, and just published the new version of the Star Trek Encyclopedia, and you can buy it now. This week's show is not a Star Trek Insider. This week's show is one of you, one of us. I'm talking to a great fan today. I'm speaking with my new friend Jacqueline Coley from Black Girl Nerds. We pre-recorded an interview when I was in Austin, Texas, a little while ago, and we're going to get to that in a moment. But before we do, did I mention Sexy Riker yet? Sexy Worf? I did. You know, there was a Star Trek Halloween episode. There was. Technically, if you want to get technical, Cat's Paw from season 2. It's a original series. It's a season 2 episode that feels like a season 3 episode, if you know what I mean. It was written and produced with Halloween in mind, and it did come out. When was the actual release date? The actual release date
October
was
1967.
Oh my God, October 27, 1967. Look at you with your high speed internet over there, Brian. Cat's Paw. If you look at it from a certain angle, if you hold it upside down and shake it by the ankles, it's basically Kirk and Spock get trapped in a haunted house. I mean, it's not really that, because there's, you know, they're on this planet and there's, you know, they sci-fi it up. But at the end of the day, they're chained up. They got spooky skeletons there. They got a giant black cat. It's some of the worst special effects. Actually, the winners of in Las Vegas this year, the winners of the costume contest were dressed as the aliens. The two aliens are revealed to be these like felt. They look like little parrots or something, like little finches. They look like these purple and red finches on visible string. And no matter how many times they remaster the Blu-ray, you can still see the string on the two aliens whose names, there they are. They look like prawns mixed with finches. Korob and Sylvia, right?
Yes, that's right.
Korob and Sylvia. Sylvia, Korob has like a stick with a little glass sphere on the end of it. And there's the cat. Look at you. It's too bad. People at home can't see it, but they know what it looks like. And if they don't, they can Google it. So, dress as Cat's Paw. That's a double Halloween. So before we get to the interview, which we recorded in Austin, Texas, not that long ago, at an awesome event called Fantastic Fest, which is a film festival, but also a culture festival, and it's all set in Austin, Texas, and it's about sci-fi, horror films, cult films, weirdo films. And I was down there, and I met with Jacqueline there. But you know what I wish I had down there with me while I was there? This is the greatest segue ever. Was I wish I was able to bring my desk so I could gaze lovingly at my Eagle Moss Star Trek Starships collection. I wish I could take it with me everywhere, but it's hard to carry a desk with you. And that's, or a mantelpiece, or a hearth where your Star Trek Starships collection should be. Do you know, and I think you do because you listen to the show, that there is this company called Eagle Moss, right? And they make these high-end models. They do all kinds of stuff. I was looking at their website. They do military watches. They do a thing where you can kind of create your own like solar system, like like scientists in like Jules Verne's, they had solariums, I think they're called. No, they're called something, but they have planets whizzing around. You can build your own, but the jewel in their crown is their Starships collection, and it goes deep. I'm telling you, it's not just the Enterprise and the Enterprise D. They got, I'm just looking at it here, they got the Nausicaan fighter, a Jem'Hadar fighter, they got the Borg cube, they got the Reliant, they got the Defiant, they got the Excelsior, and it's a mailing service. You sign up, it's $5 for the first one, free shipping, and then after that, the price goes up, but it doesn't go up exponentially. It's a reasonable amount, and you get it twice monthly. And it comes with a magazine attached so you can read up about all kinds of facts and figures. You go to st-starships.com/engage. I mention this because Eagle Moss is the sponsor of our segment, which let me get my announcement. is the sponsor of the segment we like to call Space Doc. And this week in Space Doc, we're going to talk about facts and figures of the, my notes here, Eagle Moss. Let's talk about the Voyager, or Voyager. You know, only once on the show Voyager did they call the ship Voyager the Voyager. And that was in the premiere, in the pilot, Caretaker, as they're going to. They go, look, there's the Voyager. And never again did they say the, you know? Like Facebook was called the Facebook, and then Justin Timberlake said, just call it Facebook. And then that's the movie was great. It is an Intrepid class starship, the NCC 74656. And it was constructed where? Where was it constructed, Brian? That's right, the Utopia Planitia Fleet Yards in the orbit of Mars in the year 2371. Its captain was Catherine Janeway, and Voyager, let me read to you from my notes, one of Starfleet's first starships to include bioneural circuitry, which means the ship was alive. Kinda. It had this blue goo inside the circuits, which was like a living thing, right? And that's part of what made it so wonderful. And it had variable geometry warp nacelles, and lucky for a crew that was yanked away to the Delta Quadrant on its first mission after receiving heavy losses, an emergency medical hologram program. And it was also the first one to have a Borg sleep chamber, a Borg regeneration chamber. But that's what you do when Seven of Nine shows up and in season four, because the ratings could use a boost. And also an astrometrics lab. But it did not, unfortunately, have an endless supply of coffee. The Voyager is one of the wonderful detailed models that is part of the Eagle Moss collection. Mm-hmm. And if I were you, and I had a little room on my desk, or if I didn't, I would clean it up, and get you some Eagle Moss love. Okay, good. Thank you, Eagle Moss, and thank you for this week's edition of Space Doc, which I think we called last week Dry Doc, but that's because I thought of it about 8 seconds before we started talking about it. But I prefer Space Doc. You know what else I prefer? Going back a few weeks to talk to Jacqueline Coley. Now, I was on the road while we recorded this, so I must confess that there was one or two technical glitches, and something got cut out. And she mentions it's a conversation. It's not an interview. I'm looking something up because I was going to look it up beforehand. She mentions an episode, and I knew what she was talking about, and I just kind of kept talking without responding, and it was, we talk about one of the episodes, and yes, it was the episode A Matter of Honor from season 2, episode 8 from TNG. She was like, oh yeah, the one where, and there was just like a moment of ESP, so I knew what she was talking about. But you'll hear it. It's about 20 minutes in. She's like, oh, the one where he goes to the Klingon ship. I'm like, yeah. But it's the episode A Matter of Honor. Okay, good. Those are our programming notes. We're going to zip back in time a few weeks to Austin to talk to Jacqueline. I don't know her well enough to call her Jackie. I called her Jacqueline, but I think her friends call her Jackie. She can let us know. But anyway, we'll talk then, and we will see you again next week.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is Engage, the official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
Okay, so we are on location once again. I am deep in the heart of Texas, in Austin, Texas, with an Austinite.
Yeah.
Were you born and raised in Austin?
No, but I got to Texas as fast as I could, okay, as they like to say.
Okay, good. I'm here with Jacqueline Coley as my guest today. And Jacqueline is a reporter and interviewer and oftentimes podcaster for the Black Girl Nerds
website, yeah, website, podcast, and everything in between.
Yeah, so Black Girl Nerds and Black Girl Nerds on Twitter. And my first question is, why isn't it Black Women Nerds?
I mean, I don't know. I think it just sounds better as Black Girl Nerds. Like, I've always considered myself a Black Girl Nerd. I don't know. know.
It's got some pop.
It's got some pop to it. BGN.
BGN. That sounds like a network.
Yeah, exactly.
Tune in to BGN and you'll get the latest scoop.
Yeah.
Cool. So we met not that long ago at the Toronto Film Festival. We were online. Do you remember this?
Yes.
What were we online for?
Lion, I think. Or La La Land. It was either La La Land.
Yeah, which will probably win the Academy Award this year.
Yeah, even though Moonlight should.
Yeah, well, it's apples and oranges. They're very different movies, but Moonlight is more substantial film. La La Land is the type of movie that wins the Academy Award.
Yes.
So we were online for that, and I was standing with a mutual friend, my friend Wilson Morales from New York, who I've known for 100 years, and Wilson knows everybody, so he and I are schmoozing, and then he meets you. And then I think I was wearing a Star Trek t-shirt or something. Because most of my deck, as you can see today, I'm wearing a Zatanna t-shirt. Oh,
I cosplayed her last year
for
the Austin Carnival.
Yeah.
It was a Joker theme, like, you know, whatever that is, circus theme.
Yeah,
and so I cosplayed as her.
I would like to see photographs.
Okay, I can find some
Zatanna pictures. Is one of my favorite characters. And it's goofy because, you know, I like to wear a t-shirt. Because this is like a hardcore...
Yeah,
it's like her in her fishnets and her top hat.
Yeah,
and when a dude, especially a dude of my size, walks around in the shirt, somebody's like, "What the hell's wrong with that guy?"
No.
So in Austin, you can do it.
Yes.
But other cities, you can't necessarily do it. So.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about Fantastic Fest is because you get in this bubble of just freaks letting their flag fly, and then you go to like the regular store, and you're like, "Oh, there's regular people here. We can't just sit and talk about horror movies and just be weird."
Right. Well. Anyhow, so I forget, but I was wearing some sort of Star Trek shirt, and you're like, "Oh man, Star Trek! I love Star Trek." And I'm like, "Well, hey, listen, I'm not. I don't want to tell you, but I happen to be the host of the Star Trek podcast."
And I put two and two together because I knew you were as a writer, and I'd seen your stuff, you know, because again, you comment on movies and things and all that.
True,
but then I put two and two together. I'm like, "Oh, I've listened to your podcast." But it's always like that, you know, when you put, they're like, "Oh, that's the same person."
That's the dude.
Yeah.
All right. Anyhow, so then we saw La La Land. Did you like La La Land?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I felt it hit me in all the right feels. It was fun. I mean, this is I did musical theater, so that movie didn't have a lot to go to make me love it. You know what I mean? It was a quick.
Which Star Trek character do you think is most likely to love musical theater?
Oh my gosh! Which Star Trek?
Well, some have. I mean, the Doctor from Voyager was an opera star.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dr. Crusher was a choreographer, right?
So. You know what though? And I know this sounds really weird to say it, but just because he likes observing human nature, I would say Data would have like a big fan of just watching musical theater. Sort of like the way he liked Sherlock. He would just like to watch that
because
from an outside.
Because he would say, "Ah, yes, these musical numbers are interpretations of human thought and fantasy." And he would dig on that.
Yeah. Sort of the same way he digged on like comedy and stuff. Like just from an observational standpoint.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe. So Data would be like a Stephen Sondheim fan, or like he'd be really into West Side Story or
something like that. Yeah, that'd be my guess. I mean, if I had more time to think of it, I could think of like a justification for every character to like it, right?
Right, yeah.
But that would be one that I would say, just from like outsider looking in. Same way with Spock, you know, you could just see him back there being like fascinating.
Right, yeah, it really fascinates Spock. That's what's good. I mean, and there always is that sort of, it's not a one-to-one, but there's always the Spock-like character in all of the Star Treks.
Yeah.
There is a bit of a formula there, and that's why it works. So Spock and Data and Seven of Nine, they're scientific-minded, and they're fascinated by human nature. Just they're not often human, sometimes any kind of alien nature. And Picard is, too. So
No, it's really funny that you mentioned that, too, because that's one of the things that, as a young kid, I really liked growing up as a, you know, as I like to say, nappy-headed black girl in a very predominantly white neighborhood.
Yeah.
I definitely felt that, like, outsider within kind of thing, because I grew up in Alabama is where I was born.
Okay.
In a very predominantly black neighborhood, and then my dad got shipped to Corpus Christi, which is predominantly Hispanic and Caucasian, and it was just, like, a culture shock for me in a lot of ways.
Okay.
I'd either lived on military bases, which are has a lot more diversity, or just living in just straight black neighborhoods. So it was like a total shift for me.
Yeah.
And it felt different, you know what I mean? Because this is like,
exploring,
you know,
strange new worlds to a degree,
right? Experiencing Mexican culture for the first time, you know, I mean, this is the land of Selena. So I definitely related to a little bit of that, I think, without realizing it then. But then as I go back and think about it now, I'm like, oh yeah, that's probably why, you know, I was always.
Did you see Barry at TIFF?
No, I didn't. I missed that. Okay. Another reporter saw it for us.
I don't know when Barry is coming out, but it's a very interesting movie about Barack Obama's first year at Columbia University. And it's all about his biracial-ness, right? Which is something that I didn't really think much about. I was like, I'm not biracial, so it's not like, yeah, white mother and black father. Good for him, you know? And what hit me was when he was, because now I've known, ever since I've known Barack Obama, he seemed to be like the most together guy ever. I mean, that's why he's a great president, I feel, because he's quite, you know,
focused.
Yes. He knows what's up.
Yeah, exactly.
But when he was a young man, he had to get his shit together, you know, as many of us do. And I don't know to what extent the movie is true. I mean, you never know. But anyway, the point I'm making is that he had a lot of time, a lot of trouble as a young lad figuring out where he was in the world, because he was born in a, you know, in a white community. Then, of course, he went to Indonesia. And when he went to Columbia, he was trying to fit in with the black community there, which is Columbia University's right near Harlem. Mm-hmm. But all of his classmates and his girlfriend at the time was white, and he was torn between two worlds. And I'm watching this very good and very serious movie about a very important person in our lives, in American history and world history. And the Star Trek fan in me goes, oh my God, this is reminding me a lot of Spock. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like, I don't know how. I got to be careful who I say that to.
Because I don't want to offend people. No, that's a very identifiable thing from my friends that are biracial. Like, so this is like, I feel like we're giving my like life story here.
Yeah, no, but, this is where we're also today.
But my parents got divorced. I had two African American parents, and then my mother married a white man, and so my second half of my adolescence, that was part of that shift. So my parents got divorced, and I went from, you know, I would say, you know, lower class to middle, lower middle class to a totally different level, you know, upper middle class to, I would say, even higher. Like, it's shifted. My mom's, my stepfather made a very good living. Let's just put it that way. And so, you know, we live in a community where there's a country club, and like, that's not something I was exposed to as a kid. Again, so that also goes into
a little bit of a from two worlds type of thing. And so I guess this is leading to when you were growing up, you discovered Star Trek and you identified with it from 15 different angles.
Yeah. It was
It was specifically Next Generation for you. I mean, which I don't know how old you are, but you seem pretty young. You were probably watching Next Generation when it was still in reruns, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm gonna be 35 next year, so I'm not that young.
You're not that young.
But, so it started when it started, I wasn't watching it live. Yeah. So it was when it was in syndication, and I think, what is it, maybe season 4 or 5 is when Deep Space Nine came out. Like, it was while it was going on. Yeah. So around that time is when I started watching it, and I picked it up about season 2, and then I slowly like filtered everything back in, because this is before you could go on the internet and download everything. Yeah. But
VHS tapes. Yeah. My God.
It's so funny you mentioned that. I remember having a fight with my mom in it's like used Borders, this place called Hastings in Corpus Christi, which was like used books, and movies.
Fairly corporate, so it wasn't like some great used bookstore with a cat running around. Yes. It was still like in a strip mall.
Yeah, there was a chain of them. Yeah. And I remember trying to convince her to buy The Next Generation season 3 on VHS. And she was just looking at me like, no, we're not buying that. We're going school clothes shopping. You can put that piece of crap down. Oh. And that was back when they still had the like big VHS. Yeah,
because that was a big commitment, not only just in price, but like in space.
Yes.
Like if you lived in a small home, where are you going to put that damn thing?
Yeah.
It's like 5 shoeboxes next to one another, you know?
It's so funny. I just recently, took all my VHS and, donated it to Goodwill. And it was, a moment for me, because I've replaced a lot of them on DVD or digitally.
Yeah.
But it was I had a collection.
I gave mine a Viking funeral.
Oh, you did?
I just lit it all on fire and said goodbye.
Really?
No, I'm joking. I sold it. Well, I live in New York, so space is at a premium. So my wife at some point said, we don't need these. It was mostly CDs.
Okay.
Right? And I had taken a great deal of time. It took a long time, months, maybe a year, to get all my CDs burned onto a hard drive. And then I cloned the hard drive. And then I cloned the clone.
Mm.
And we're talking years, decades worth of CD collecting. You know, when I was in college, I was really into music. And I always have been all sorts of, I'm into weird music. I had about a dozen different Indonesian gamelan discs. So I was really into that for a while.
Yeah, you can't replace that on Amazon.
So I digitized it all, and then like we got a guy. I was going to sell them, and like nobody wanted to buy them. I'm putting them on half.com and email. Like nobody wants my crap. And then if they do want, I got to get it to the mailbox. It's a pain in the butt. So I hired a guy and came, took all my CDs, gave me $1,000 cash, and that was it. Yeah. And the amount of money I put into it over the years, but it had to be done.
Yeah, it had to be done. And mine was even worse because I just gave it away because I felt like if I tried to sell it, I wouldn't part with certain movies. Because there was like, I had like, this is again showing my age, I had The Sopranos, like all four, five seasons. Half of them were on VHS and half of them were on DVD. And like stuff like that you just don't need anymore.
No,
like
you really don't.
HBO Go ended half of my
collection. And all that music that I gave away, I'd say 85% of it is on Spotify.
Oh, it is.
So you don't really need it that much. So we're talking, though, about your introduction to Star Trek TNG and how it spoke to you and how it helped you develop into the person that you are today.
I mean, I would say that, you know, what makes me now, you know, keeping it black and nerdy, as I like to say, it started with Star Trek because it was the first sci-fi show that I felt not only had a diverse cast, but there wasn't this tokenism that you see sometimes where it's just like, okay, we have this one character that's going to fulfill this one role. I mean, Geordi LaForge being not only who he was, but that he was one of the smartest people on the ship.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was so in charge of a very huge aspect of how the ship ran. And then also having Worf, who was like also showed a different aspect of things. You know what I mean? And then Guinan. Like, I started watching when all three of them were really kind of in their heyday. You know, people were going to 10 forward a lot. And that was really the first episodes that I watched. And I will admit, you know, Whoopi Goldberg was the thing. I was, like, flipping through channels, you know, probably at 12 or 13. And I was like, oh, Whoopi Goldberg's on this sci-fi
kind of
show.
Let's
watch this, you know.
Which is exactly why she took the role. Because she was so in love with Nichelle Nichols and with Star Trek and sci-fi. And she wanted to... you know, she won the Oscar, and the world said to her, you just won the Oscar, you're America's favorite comedian, you're the first black woman to win the Oscar since 1939, you have a blank check, what do you want to do? She's like, I want to be on Star Trek.
Yes.
And of course the producers thought she was joking.
No, and then she goes. It's sort of like that same thing where people, I feel like Star Trek nerds sometimes don't like broadcast it because it's not something to broadcast as much as Star Wars nerds do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we're deep in the love, and like, you know, I don't know what I would do just to have like an extra role on this new Discovery. Like who do I have to like marry to make myself on there? But so that's what started it, and it was great to see those characters. Like, I loved how Guinan was so mysterious in the series, like finding out her slow backstory. The episode with her and Q, like, I used to watch that one on repeat. It was one of the first things I recorded off of TV, was like her, you know, with this like weird grab, and she's like, I'm gonna hurt you. And I was like, what does that mean? It really sort of...
Yeah,
you know,
she was very mysterious, and when they eventually teased out more about her character, and then, you know, in Time's Arrow, and then even the movies, I mean, it was, in Generations anyhow, it was really more than just the bartender. They made her a cool character. One thing that, you know, when I was a kid watching, I joke about this a lot, my parents were really not into Star Trek. My mother mocked me incessantly, and my older sister referred to it as Star Drek, you know, which was funny. But at one point along the way, my father saw me watching Next Generation and saw LeVar Burton and was like, oh, that's the kid from Roots.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, this is a real show. Like, that's a great actor. And, like, he's important.
Yeah.
And because nobody else in the cast at that time was anybody. Except, I mean, Patrick Stewart was if you were a British Shakespearean.
Thespian.
Right.
But...
Or if you recognized him from I, Claudius, which you may not because he wore a wig in that.
Yeah. And I had read, like, that he wore that wig to his first audition or whatever, and they were like, you know, forget the wig, dude.
And what's funny is that I had seen I, Claudius, and then I didn't put the two together until years later. I'm like, oh, my God, that's Captain Picard. So it was like, oh, LeVar Burton was kind of the biggest star in a way. I mean, so that sort of legitimized the show a little bit to my folks. The other thing that's interesting is Worf, you mentioned, because Klingons in original series were played by white guys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one was Syrian immigrant, so but not African American.
Yeah.
And then on some of the other great Klingons, Gowron, Martok, are played by white men.
Yeah.
So, and they look, you know, their skin tone looks the same on the show. Uh-huh. So it's not like one must be black to be a Klingon. So you don't, some may not associate Klingons with blackness. Where does that work with you? Because I, you know, I didn't know Michael Dorn was black until the first time I saw him out of makeup. I never thought about it, you know?
You know, and that's kind of what I liked about it, too. Yeah. Like, I went and looked him up, like, immediately. Right. Like, I remember, this was back when we had AOL, I had to go to my friend's house. I'm like, I need to see if this guy's really black. Like, right. I want to make sure, you know? Yeah. There was parts of me that enjoyed it and didn't like it. So I forget the episode, the one where they do the switch out. It seemed like all of the Klingons were black, you know what I mean? And it had that feel to it. And so in those episodes, I felt I didn't like it as much, if that had something to say with it. I liked it better when they didn't feel like they had one race described to the Klingons. Yeah, and that episode was the one where I was kind of like, I really don't like that it feels like all the Klingons.
Because they were menacing in a way? They were meant to be...
I guess at the time it sort of made it like, okay, these guys are the enemy and they have these preconceived notions about things and they're not able to assimilate. And I didn't really like it as much as I liked it when they just seemed to be more about the race of Klingons and less about their skin tone. Like I liked that better. And it's really funny. I picked up TNG as second season.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of glad that I did, because I went back and watched the first season.
I know where you're going.
Yeah,
with this.
And like there's so many instances in the first season where I'm like, okay, y'all need to
to get it together. Well, that one particular episode which has been disavowed by pretty much everybody on the show.
Yeah, and
the episode is called
Mark of Honor, Mask, something of honor.
Yeah, it's when Tasha Yar is basically
like we're gonna kidnap the white woman.
Yeah, it's really rough.
I mean, like, let's talk about it. That's like the basic plot of the Birth of a Nation. Like, be careful.
Yeah, no, it's rough, and I don't know how it happened. And I talked about this with it came up when Dave Schilling was on the show also, and it was like, who was anybody awake at the switch that week to say, why are we doing this? But it was an error. And luckily you missed it and didn't you went straight to
Because I don't know if I would have watched it all the way through after that, because maybe not. Again, I was watching it at 13, 14, and I wasn't maybe as, like, as I like to say, woke about things, but it would have still, I think, struck
me.
Well,
I mean, I think, you know, let's do a thought experiment here. I would like to think Gene Roddenberry he was very involved in season one. He came from a place of utopian ideals. Mm-hmm. And I think he was saying, in the future, when there is no more racism, sexism, prejudice of any kind, one could present a planet of people who look a certain way and act a certain way and not necessarily make racial connections that are sort of bigoted connections of today. Okay. But his show was coming out in 1987.
Yeah. Like, let's keep it real. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So it's it was a mistake. It was definitely a mistake. But it was the three. It was Whoopi Goldberg and LeVar and Michael Dorn.
And then you mentioned LeVar, because, again, I was too young to see Roots, you know what I mean, come out. And so I saw that later. And so I only associated him with the Reading Rainbow. So to see him, after imagining him as Geordi and the cool guy from the Reading Rainbow, and then to go back and watch Roots, it was very different.
As like, you know, it's my friendly Reading Rainbow.
Yes, and he's getting beaten and just like brutalized in this. And we had him on the podcast not too long ago.
Oh, awesome.
And you know, everyone on is just fangirling. Because, I mean, again, he was the first, you know, again, black nerd. You know, there's a lot of people in black culture that, you know, still to this day don't always look as intelligent, like, look at intelligence with a positive light. Like, what are you trying to do and what are you trying to be? And he showed that it was okay to be a smart black nerd. I'm not saying everyone's like that, but there are people who still to this day, like, feel like, you know, again, what is the Chris Rock joke? It's like, you got your masters, you my master now. There's a part of the black population that still feels that way.
Yeah,
you know,
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, that's that, and you can't overstate the importance of him at that time.
Yeah,
I mean, late 80s, early 90s,
being somebody where it was like, okay, it's cool to be, you know.
And I don't think there was ever a time where his race was ever mentioned.
Nope. And that was the best part about it.
Like,
yeah.
And like, not even like in a historical context. Like, Uhura, they don't really mention it either, except for, you tell me, the episode The Savage Curtain, where Abraham Lincoln shows up.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a little rough. I mean, remember, it's 1968, 69, but, and it's meant to be positive, but it's like, Abraham Lincoln refers to her as a charming Negress.
Yes. And Negress. I do remember that. Yeah. I was like, I remember it. Well, I was thinking to myself, I was like, what term did he use towards her? Because that's what everyone remembers now.
It's okay. And it's, you know, it's, listen, original series was so progressive for its time, but it was still the 60s. There was a lot of sexism in that show. And
well, I was
we
just
talk about
ask
it all the time.
Well, I was
going
to ask you about that, too, because I feel, you know, Gene had like a very utopian view about race and I would say countries coming together. But there's a lot of the things that he felt about gender and sexuality that I felt he was also a little like, you know, of his time in a lot of ways.
He was of his time. And I think he was a man who was enjoying the sexual revolution as it benefited him. You know, I don't think he was enjoying it as like a liberate your mind. Yeah. It was more of a like, oh, wow, there's a lot of this stuff I can get away with right now. And he, you know, had his dalliances. But, you know, it was the show. It was TV. It was, you know, get sexy dames on TV.
Yeah.
Especially if you want to make a weirdo science fiction show. So the outfits were the outfits. Yeah. I mean, the outfits are great. I mean, look, you go to conventions now and women love to wear the outfits. Men like to wear the women's
outfits. I'm not
going to
hate on it. You know, I never did the green girl, you know, costume. Right. But I don't know. I've done some other things. You know what I mean? Like we were talking about my Zatanna, you know, cosplay is not exactly something I would wear to church.
Right. But the mini skirts are the mini skirts. And, you know, I do compare Star Trek conventions to other conventions that I go to. And I think there is more of a dude bro attitude at regular Comic-Cons. But at Star Trek conventions,
it's different.
If a woman of larger size is going to dress like Uhura, there is no one who is going to tisk or make a face. It is bravo all the way around, which is something that I think is notable and commendable, you know?
No, and I will feel that there is there's a lot of gatekeeping sometime in nerddom. You know, what do you feel like, do you know this? Do you know that? You know what I mean? I don't feel that with my Trekkie friends at all. Like, I tell people, it's like, look, I'm not an original series girl. Like, I've watched what I consider the big episodes, you know, Arena, Trouble with Tribbles, but I have not watched the whole original series all the way through, honestly, because I tried and I just got so like, okay, dude, this is not. But I had a friend of mine who is like everything, Voyager, and like he's watched every single episode, and he told me, he was like, you know, I love every aspect of this, but he even said to me, he's like, but here, watch these 10 episodes, make sure you understand the canon, but don't feel like you need to go back to be a part of us. Because that's what he felt when I was telling him my struggles through watching it. He's like, don't feel like you have to watch this to be a fan. Yeah. He's like, just enjoy what you enjoy and stay happy with that. And I think that's not necessarily something I would hear from my comic book friends all the time.
No, it's like if you say you like Green Lantern, you have to you have to read the Kyle Rayner stuff too. It's like Kyle Rayner blows. He's boring. No, you must read it all.
Yeah,
so.
I like that. And again, I hate that aspect of nerddom sometimes is the gatekeeping. I was even talking to a friend of mine that there's some of that, you know, you talk about Comic-Con, and I was telling her that like, okay, obviously I report on geek and entertainment now. I'm never going to stop going to Comic-Con unless I stop doing this job. But there's a part of me that doesn't enjoy that convention anymore in a lot of ways.
In San Diego specifically?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, that convention and that aspect of geek culture became very mainstream in the last, really, 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I time it to the release of The Dark Knight and Iron Man. That was both 2007, right?
Yeah.
Iron Man was 2007, Dark Knight was 2008, I think. So we're talking about a decade ago, and that's when things really blew up, and then the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and now, you know, all that, the current DC films, and...
for what they are.
there's some problems there, but, it is a little bit of, you know, there used to be the cliche of, you know, the comic book store clerk would kind of frown at you if he didn't know your stuff. And I think that smart comic book stores don't hire those people anymore.
No.
You know, I rarely see that at a comic book store now because they know, hey, if somebody doesn't feel good here, they're going to buy it on Comixology. So.
Exactly. They have to be nicer because the internet has sort of like, I would say like, you know, leveled the playing field.
But that's at the shops. The cliche about other fans, though, I think does exist in comics and certain other fandoms. But I don't see it much with Trek as a guy who goes to a lot of conventions. It's always like, I feel like when you meet somebody who doesn't know as much, some fans look at it as, well, here's an opportunity to get somebody into it. Like, you'll see a fan who was like, you know, oh, I haven't watched Deep Space Nine yet because it seems too big, and I know it's all, a lot of it is a continuation, and I don't know where to start. And then it's like, oh, well, you know, here's where you have to look forward to. You know, so
that's very much true, because I still have a friend of mine, because, again, confession, I've maybe watched two episodes of Enterprise, maybe, you know, I think it was a Scott Bakula thing. I will just always think of him as Quantum Leap. So I just I don't want to necessarily watch him in anything else. Yeah. And it just I like having him as that.
OK,
but he's still trying to convince me.
Enterprise is good. Enterprise is, I will say, that of the series is. They're all brilliant. They're all wonderful. I love them all. But that is the one that, if there was a boat and I could only fit four of the seasons
yeah,
on,
you're kicking that one out.
I mean, I would. And that's just the reality. But there are so many great things about Enterprise. And there's a great black character.
Yes, exactly. Travis that's Lee, what he whatever. Says. And he's
cool because he's the first guy to have been born in space.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's kind of his thing. And he's a cool pilot. And his parents are interesting. And he isn't in it that much. But he's a great kind of member of the crew. And the tragedy of Enterprise is that it gets better as it gets going.
And then that's the problem, too, is like the episodes, again, I mean, we're older now, right? So my time is limited. I mean, I'm like literally right now we're at Fantastic Fest and I got to go to work this week. And then I'm like, okay, I've got to find time next weekend to watch Luke Cage or they're going to revoke my Black Girl Nerd card. Like if I don't like marathon this through the weekend, I'm not going to be able to participate in the fandom.
Yeah, no, that is true.
It's hard for me to sometimes, you know, sit down to watch stuff that I maybe missed the first time around. You know what I mean?
But that's why you know that you're not going to be that into. But I will say there is a lot of good stuff in Enterprise. Yeah. But I haven't watched Stranger Things yet.
Oh.
I know there's I love Star Wars. The Star Wars Rebels show is supposedly really good.
Okay.
But I haven't seen it. It's a cartoon.
Again, you know, we get
cartoons
a little older.
Except for Star Trek the Animated Series. That's a wonderful show.
You get a little older, you have competing things going on, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, as I like to tell people, it's like friends of mine who knew me in high school are always very surprised when they like get on my Twitter and Facebook now, because they're like, you're into all these things that we didn't know about. And I'm like, well, it's not that I didn't have these interests. I just didn't broadcast it at the time because I kind of wanted to be asked out on dates and I was a girl. And I will admit that, you know, I'm a little ashamed to admit it now. But I wasn't going to tell a guy at the time.
Back then it would. I mean, it's true. I mean, now the kids today don't know how good they have it that they can say, oh, I want to go see Doctor Strange the minute it opens. When you know, in high school, that would be a dating suicide, right? I mean, it would be. There was some. I mean, I don't know. It wasn't like total social ostracism, but when I grew up, comics were not cool.
Yeah.
They were not cool. They were for weirdos, and Star Trek was certainly the original series was incredibly not cool.
Yeah.
And the movies weren't, but I would still go opening night. And the Next Generation was not cool until the episode Conspiracy.
Okay.
Which is the one where the neural parasites, and they blow the guy's head up.
Yeah.
I think it's season one. That was the first one where some of the I don't want to call them the jocks or the, let's call them the jocks. They were like, did you see that show? They blew up a guy's brain on TV. I was like, well, yeah, all right. So this guy likes it. So
I think the movies is when I started feeling the shift. Like when they started doing, First Contact, I remember people like talking about that in a positive way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like friends of mine, you know?
Yeah. Well, First Contact was so great.
Yes.
I mean, you can't, and you don't really have to know anything about the film. I mean, about these characters. You can go, hey, Captain Picard's the guy in charge and he's great, and they're all these, and they're going back in time, and let's have fun. But they're not going back in time. They're going back in time, but they're still going to our future.
Yeah.
That's why it's such a great idea. How come nobody thought to do that before? So it's pretty cool. And
the Inception, showing sort of like this is where it came from. I just loved that, that whole aspect of it. And
one of the best black characters in Star Trek.
Oh yeah,
Alfre Woodard.
Blow up the damn ship, Picard. Yeah, I mean, just seriously, I love
it's
her.
It's so great. She's a total outsider. She doesn't know anything about the Enterprise. Just blow up the damn ship, and she's right. Oh my God, it takes an outsider to say that.
I love her. And you know what? She's deep in Marvel now because she's gonna be in She was in the what was it, Civil War?
Yeah.
And they said that she might be doing something with the new Black Panther movie as well, because she was in the Black Panther series that nobody saw that was on BET.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. The guy from the Boondocks, one of the co-creators of that, did it, and it was like a 4-season. I don't know. It was a pretty small series, yeah. But
she's a great actress.
Yeah.
She made a movie in the 90s that very few people saw called Passion Fish.
Okay.
And it was her, and it was Mary McDonnell, who you might remember as President Laura Roslin from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, okay.
And it was set in Louisiana, and it is a great, great independent film about two women. And Mary McDonnell is a soap opera star in New York,
mm-hmm.
and she's, you know, rich kind of snob, and she was originally from the South. And the first scene is she's waking up in a hospital bed. She has no idea where she is, and she was in a car accident, doesn't remember. And she's been paralyzed from the waist down. So she goes back home to where she grew up, because she owns a house there. It's her parents' old house. And she becomes an alcoholic. She's a mess. And she hires a series of nurses to take care of her. And one by one, they quit, because she's such a mean person, because she's so miserable about her lot in life. And the newest nurse to come in is played by Alfre Woodard. But she won't quit. And finally, Mary McDonald's like, well, I'm going to fire you because you're mean. She's like, you can't fire me. Please don't fire me. Like, if I don't keep this job, it's like, I'm not quitting because I like you. But it's like, if I don't keep this job, I'm done. Like,
yeah.
She's had a rough life. And so when they realize they're both desperate, they become the best of friends.
Oh.
And it's a great movie. It has nothing to do with Star Trek. Other than that, she's in it, and Battlestar Galactica gal's in it. But it's called Passion Fish. It's probably on Netflix.
I
gotta
check that out.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at all. I love really when good. People tell me about, because I've become into independent film.
Yeah.
I think I now come to realize I've always liked independent film, but now I'm much more about, like, no, I want to see this movie before everyone starts talking about it kind of things. I want to see it on the festival circuit. I want to know about these up-and-coming directors.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's driving a lot of the best filmmaking that's happening right now. Like,
oh, yeah.
I just
and then oftentimes they get plucked and they start doing the nerdy mainstream stuff that we like.
You know,
Colin Trevorrow goes, he's not the best example, but...
Hey, he's doing... Actually, Ava talked about that, you know, the director of Selma, because she actually made a comparison, because they were in the same class at Sundance, and they had that dinner where they basically...
Ava DuVernay.
And they take them there, and she was excited for, like, I think they gave her, like, $4 or $5 million to do Selma, and he was getting ready to do Jurassic World.
He made a small movie called Safety Not Guaranteed. With the gal that I love. She's funny. Her name is Aubrey Plaza. Yeah,
okay,
she's in it. And so, yeah, he made a tiny little movie, and then he made Jurassic World with a budget of $7 zillion.
And she was saying, like, they kind of started their career as far as directors at the same time, and she commented on, that's honestly the difference sometimes of being a female director and being a male director, because she just got the biggest budget of a black woman ever at $100 million for A Wrinkle in Time. Just think about that for a second. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it says something. But yeah, I love that it's driving good movies.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of a big... Trevorrow, in a way, got railroaded because of... The thing is, his first movie wasn't that great, and I didn't think Jurassic World was that great either. So he was held up as Hollywood is a bit of an old boys network, because so many of the producers that gave him the money to make... Jurassic World, including Steven Spielberg, said, and this is the type of thing that's said in press all the time, that says, oh, what a nice story. They said, oh, he reminds me of me when I was his age. And that's a heartwarming thing, but it's like, and that's why no black women are getting, or women in general,
are
getting blockbuster films, because you need to crack that cycle.
Yeah.
Because if Steven Spielberg is going to be reminded of Trevor, and that's cool.
Well,
you
also
got
to look, too, at like the mentorship. You know, like Steven Spielberg had a huge effect on J.J. Abrams, like gave him one of his first jobs. And so, like, you got to talk about that, right? So,
The Spielberg-Abrams connection. And, they look alike.
Yeah.
They're from very similar backgrounds. I have a theory about that, by the way.
You think they're the same person?
No, and I'm ultimately pro J.J. Abrams, but I have a nuanced opinion of him. You know, I feel like he's done many great things, including the casting of the new films is dynamite. I think ultimately the reboot films are a plus. But I feel like a guy like Spielberg keeps Abrams around as his, like, young Padawan.
Oh.
It's because he is a very similar but less talented version of himself. So Spielberg can be like, this is my junior, and compare us, and I'm better.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say.
Is that a controversial statement?
I don't think it's a controversial statement, but damn, you're going hard for Abrams, man.
No, I like him. I like,
the shot's fired.
Well, I mean, look at Super 8. Super 8 is just like, I want to be Steven Spielberg and I can't do it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Super 8 is a flawed movie. The second Star Trek movie is flawed, although not horrible. The first one's terrific.
I was just going to say, I meant to ask you this, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but because I have a Star Trek friend of mine who despises the Uhura Spock love story.
You know what? They're both so beautiful that I don't mind.
You don't?
I don't mind. And it does have its roots in canon. There are always, if you look back at the Man Trap, that she's a little bit flirty with him, and then they kind of move that to more make Nurse Chapel more flirty with him. But I don't mind it at all. I mean, because they're both so lovely to look at on a big screen, and when they're smooching, it makes my heart a flutter. So.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you. Obviously, I loved it. I'm not gonna lie. I liked it, but I did hear from a lot of my friends. It's not even that they disliked, you know, the characters. They just felt it wasn't necessary. They didn't understand it for motivations. Me personally, I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed seeing Uhura have a relationship with anyone, honestly.
Right,
the fact that it was Spock just added a different dynamic to it.
They needed to flesh her out more because so much of her, at least on the show, was just like her representation of who she was. That's the character.
Exactly, that tokenism thing.
Again. A little bit, yeah. But not to in any way downplay how radical it was for 66.
Yes. Yeah.
And then later in the films, like The Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock, she is given more to do. But I think one great thing about the new films, the Spock Uhura romance, is the way it plays off of Kirk.
Yeah.
Because Kirk gets the girl.
Yeah.
And he made a play for Uhura at the bar.
Yeah. Right.
And then they became good friends. And if you read the comics also, the tie-in comics, there's more about how Uhura and he kind of have a special, like on the bridge, she's very respectful. He's the captain. But like during off hours, she's a little bit like,
Go away.
A little bit like, yeah, I know you, buddy. I've known you for a long time.
Really? I haven't read those. You know, I got to read those.
They're
now.
Kind of fun. They're pretty fun. So and then, of course, this is one of the best scenes in Star Trek Into Darkness, the film that keeps me up at nights because it is not so great. It's the moment when they're going on to the Klingon homeworld and Uhura and Spock start getting in a fight.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, guys, are we doing
this
right now?
Can we do this right now? And honestly, that is a very, like, you know, you're married and I've been in a relationship. That's a very real thing because you don't care. The fight just sometimes needs to happen.
Right.
And we're not going to care where it's at.
Supermarket.
Like, no, we're doing this now.
Yeah. No, right here in the produce aisle.
Yeah, because otherwise we're not going to talk about it because we'll go home and then you'll go do something and I'll go do something.
Right,
and we're
going
to talk about this now.
No, so that was a funny bit. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, some people blew their tops. Because in the original series, Spock was always of two worlds, but it took a long time for that human side of him to become sort of an important plot point. It was always like it wasn't until later that you realize that all Vulcans are constantly at war with their emotions.
Yeah.
But Spock is doubly so because he's half human. And that doesn't really come out so much in season one of the original series. That sort of came out later in the films and certainly in the books. And then as we reflect on it, and then as you hear Leonard Nimoy speak about it over the years. So it kind of jumped to that on this. But, you know, hey, listen, Sarek had a human wife. Why wouldn't Spock want to have a human wife?
And, and I think it says a lot, too, of how I do like that they played up more about his emotions, because you're right, it was there, but it was not as talked about in the earlier stuff. And I'm not going to lie, one of my favorite scenes is from the first one, 2009, when Uhura's talking to him immediately after they've blown up Vulcan.
Yeah.
And like, there's just that non-scene where he's just like, I want everyone to keep, you know, performing admirably.
Yeah.
And they have this moment where she's just like, oh, sweetie. You know? And I love that.
What do you need?
Yeah. Oh, man. And I just love that scene. It hits me in the feels every time.
Really,
I get
nice.
A little.
And she is not an unattractive woman. Let's be very honest.
And making a good living off of being, you know, the hot nerd girl in movies. I mean, she's doing that.
She's cornering the market. Guardians of the Galaxy, Avatar, don't forget also.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh,
really.
Yeah, if they ever make those movies. Well, I mean, feel like it's a dream now that those movies are going to come back. I mean, he says he's going to, but
I don't know.
Not saying I'm particularly like holding myself up at night
and
waiting.
And also, I feel like Avatar was fine, but it's like I don't need Chapter 2.
Yeah.
Avatar as its own thing is, like, I'm kind of done, you know?
But I mean,
but it was good.
It made too much money, though. That's the thing.
It did. It did. It was weird because Avatar was the biggest moneymaker of all time, right?
I think so. For maybe English language. I think there may be like a Chinese or Japanese language movie that may have made more, but maybe English language. I don't know.
Well, Avatar was such a cultural phenomenon and is not really talked about much mm-hmm. anymore. Like, you go to Comic-Con, good luck finding someone cosplaying as a Na'vi. Or Jake Sully.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever character, what was the name that Sigourney Weaver played, the character?
Oh,
Colonel
so
and so. See, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I just called him Colonel Badass.
So the movie was weird. I think part of Avatar's appeal really was just they marketed the theater going experience, the 3D and the computer generated motion capture so well. They had sold this is the biggest things since, like, it's like if you go see Avatar, you're gonna know what your great grandfather felt when he saw Wizard of Oz.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's gonna be that much of an oh my god, everything has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in retrospect, I don't think that was true, but they sold it that way to the point that people that would never go see a weirdo movie about mm-hmm. the giant Leonoptrix and some blue weirdo with a tail flopping around on another planet. But it wasn't because, so I don't know. I mean, listen. If Avatar 2 was opening next week, I'd sure as hell go.
I mean, who's not, right?
But it's not like the number one thing. But yeah, so yeah, she really has. That's her beat, you know.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back to Engage.
Engage.
The official Star Trek podcast with your host, Jordan Hoffman.
You are, after all, irrational.
Any closing thoughts on Next Generation?
No, I mean,
I feel like we were all over the place.
I know,
that's the
we
way,
really did.
That's the way I like to do conversations.
No, this is
sometimes.
The thing, though, too. Again, getting film geeks together, yeah. I feel like you'll go everywhere. But yeah, no, I really, TNG was just a special time, man. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people would say it's one of their favorites, but I loved Deep Space Nine. And I actually like the later seasons of Voyager where, you know, Seven of Nine became much more in the series. And so, yeah, it's been a great thing. I like other stuff too, but I will admit that Star Trek is one of those ones that even with things like, you know, Into Darkness, where I'm slightly disappointed,
right? Yeah,
it's still better. The biggest tragedy, God, not enough people saw Star Trek Beyond because I flipping loved it.
Well,
I don't know how you felt about it,
I loved
but
it too.
I loved
it. I thought
it,
it was so good.
That...
I really loved it to pieces. I did the best I could. I saw it a few times. Well, I mean, look, the movie didn't lose money.
No, but it wasn't.
But it was not the hit it deserved to be. And what I think is going to happen is in X amount of months, it's going to show up on VOD. It's going to show up on Netflix, on HBO Go, and all these things. And people are going to realize, oh, this was great. Oh,
this was that action movie for the summer that we wanted to see instead of being disappointed by, you know, the
Suicide Squad, Snow White prequel. Was it a prequel or a sequel?
Nice.
I don't even know.
It was a prequel. Yeah, it was
a prequel to a movie nobody liked in the first place.
I mean, you know what's really... But it made money, and so that's why they made another. Yeah. Same thing with Alice in Wonderland. That's why they made another.
Right. Warcraft, did you see Warcraft? You're a gamer. Warcraft kill you?
So funny. I wrote an article about Warcraft because, I didn't report on it, but I did see it.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big Warcraft fan, but they're going to have more of those because I don't know if you saw the numbers from China on that movie, but it like dominated and it talks about, I wrote an article talking about how the foreign box office drives way more of cinema now than people realize that people are not only marketing towards it but catering towards it. People complained about, you know, Bay in the last Transformers movie. There's a reason why I did it, you know.
It is very interesting, and there are a lot of articles to read, and there's a lot of rumor and hearsay, but one could surmise that, you know, the great moment in Star Trek Beyond when Sulu sees his husband and they kind of cuddle, embrace, put their arms around each other. They did shoot a version where they did a very quick kiss, and that ain't gonna fly in China. So
they
took it out, and but maybe that there. I don't know for certain. Maybe they just artistically thought it looked better the other way.
How did you feel about that? I'm sorry, I feel like we're just rambling now.
The gay thing? I thought it was terrific.
I did too, and I was so like kind of sad that you know, and I read what George had to say about why he didn't like it.
Yeah, but he walked it back a little bit down the line.
But you know, I still think those are his feelings. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I did love the way John Cho portrayed it, and I felt again, I'm so sad that people that more people didn't see that movie. I was like telling everyone. I was
But I think I have very positive feeling that it will be respected more soon when more people see it, and then the conversation is going to be, why the hell didn't we catch this in theaters? Because I had friends or people I know on social media, on Twitter, that would be like, oh yeah, I hear the new Star Trek's good, but I missed it. I'm like, well, it's still in theaters, and like, I'm going to the beach this weekend. And like, well, you lose, you know?
And with a compelling villain, too. Like, Idris did an amazing job, in my opinion. At first, when I was watching it, I was like, what is this guy really doing? And then as soon as, like, you get the twist, you're like, oh, and it was, I loved it.
I fought for you.
I mean, again, Idris doesn't have to do much to take my money, but he did a great job.
He was pretty cool. And I love the gal. I forget her real name.
Oh,
the French Algerian woman with the long last name.
Jala or
whatever. Well, Jayla, the movie. But the actress's name, I can't say off the top of my head. But she'll be back in the comics for sure. If they make this fourth movie, who the hell knows if they will or not. But
it's going to be hard now with, you know, Antoine and the movie not doing as well.
Right. Well, they would not recast Chekhov for sure. And the thing is, the movie didn't do poorly.
No, you didn't. But I think it definitely
could have done more.
It didn't hit the what they hoped it would.
I don't think so. I think you're right. Yeah.
And
so what they would do is, if they did a fourth one, they would do on a lower budget.
Yeah.
You know, they say, look, this is what these movies make now.
Yeah.
And I still think it's worth it. If I was in charge of the studio, I would say, look, you know, we want our action movies, our IMAX movies, to make a profit margin of X, and we didn't make that. So we're going to just bring everything down a notch, and, you know, people that see Star Trek movies see them.
Yeah, like, so, you got our money. Right. We're going to show up as much as we bitch about Sorry.
So, that's so when they put me in charge of Paramount, that's what I would do. But it ain't happening soon. But you know, it was good. And I ultimately am positive on the new films. I mean, there are some bumps in the road, but
no, and I agree with you on Into Darkness.
The Biggie is going to be the new show. I mean, yeah, we should probably wrap up by talking about this. It's still, you know, any minute now, we're going to have more news about the show.
Yeah, it seems
we
very under wraps, you know?
It's like extremely under wraps.
They're guarding it.
The educated guess is Jacqueline, my reporter from Black Girl Nerds Incorporated .org is probably going to be a black woman in the lead.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yes.
I'm not 100% sure. It's probably. It may be a Hispanic woman. It may be an Arab American or Arab Anglo Pakistani, whatever. Mm-hmm. Or it could not. It could be a white girl. We don't know. But it you gave me a wink like
I'm
it's
like,
not.
I mean,
it's probably not.
It's probably not.
All signs point to it not being. And I mean, there's so many new things they're doing about this. A, making it a woman in the lead. B, making it a woman of color, probably. And C, making it not a captain, which in a way is the biggest shock of all.
Yeah, like it's going to
Star Trek
follow...
fans aren't going to be rattled by it being a black woman. Star Trek fans are going to be rattled by it not being a captain. You know?
Well, maybe don't you... I mean, again, this is me reading into it, but I didn't... I don't know what you're saying, but I like the idea of one thing we haven't really seen is someone's, besides Kirk in the new movie, someone's journey to become a captain.
Right.
Wouldn't you think that'd be kind of cool to see someone from an ensign to a captain?
Absolutely.
I really want to see that. I mean, we see it in side characters, but really just concentrate on that person's development.
It's a little bit of like a view into Starfleet from a different POV. I mean,
yeah.
That's really what it is. So, I'm very excited about the new show. And when we know more, we should get in touch.
Yeah.
We'll give you a call. We'll Skype you in from New York. Yes. And we'll need to know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's the potential for this new show to be as big as Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Why not? You know,
yeah.
They're putting a lot of money into it. And if, let's put it this way, if the producers of Game of Thrones, the TV show, had the ability to make concurrent films in the same universe as Game of Thrones, even if it was different actors. Believe me, they would.
Yeah. You know, I mean, look at, like, people talk about it. I think, you know, one of the big drives to get the Flash and the DC movies is how well the TV show does. And granted, it's different characters, but more people know Barry Allen.
Yeah.
And so when they see Superman and all that, they want to see that go.
So why did the DC movies suck so hard and the TV shows
they
are
had,
good?
Were you at the debates? Didn't we talk about this? Zack Snyder? Hello?
Oh, man. You know what's funny about Zack Snyder is he has made two movies that I love. All right? I'm going to tell you. I honestly think 300 is wonderful.
Yeah.
Because for its time, it was so visually innovative. I think it's satirical in a Verhoeven way. I think it just looks great. And it was very great for its time because it was before the big rush of comic book movies. It was right. It came out in 2007.
Yeah, yeah,
right,
early.
Before Iron Man.
Yeah.
A couple months. So I loved 300, and I've seen it a number of times to make sure I still love it. I mean, it's ridiculous, over the top, alpha male garbage, but it's done in a. If you're gonna do it all the way once in a while.
Yeah, yeah. With the abs and everything.
Oh yeah, very handsome gentleman. The other movie that he made that was great, The Guardians of Ga'Hoole. The owl movie.
Yeah.
You remember the movie
that
you made
Jim
about the
Sturgis
owl?
Is his voice in that one?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a bunch of owls flying around.
I've seen it. If you asked me to tell you the plot points of it now, I couldn't tell you.
A bunch of adorable owls flying around, fighting bad owls, little cutesy good owls. I remember just that movie just really grabbed me. And everything else he's made, Man of Steel wasn't that bad.
I'm the wrong person to ask about that. I literally fell asleep on that movie three times. Ur. Could not get through it. I finally have watched it all the way through, but it was literally a movie that I was like, I can't get to the end of this movie. Like, I just can't. Like, I feel like there's something holding me back.
Well, then you probably really hated Batman v Superman.
You know what? I did not. This is another one. I did not watch the theatrical version. I only watched the extended
version, which is like 40,000 hours long.
Yes, but there was a reason for it. Is they flew BGN out to that, and a couple other people I know went to that very first like fan showing that they did out in LA. And based off of what some people said, I was kind of like, you know, I'm not going to run to go see this. I know it's part of the nerddom, and I should be like...
Going back to what you said earlier, time is precious.
And so I didn't run to see it, and I did not hate the director's version, I think, as much. Okay. It was long as hell.
But you had been prepared to
yeah, I went into it thinking that it was going to be...
atrocious.
Yeah, and so the fact that I was able to at least get through it.
Yeah. No, it's not atrocious. It's watchable. Jesse Eisenberg's version of Lex Luthor is obscenely terrible.
Did you hear who that was based off of?
No.
So there's a rumor that that was based off of the screenwriter Max Landis, who did Jesse Eisenberg's last. And if... Wait. So he did, you know, American Ultra.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know... I'm not going to lie. If you go and look at some Max Landis interviews and then go look at that version of Lex Luthor, I'm not saying that it's not too far off the mark.
Well, that's very funny for a number of reasons. We have had someone on the show who is working with Max Landis, so I have to at least put up lip service to say that I like Max Landis. But we had Dean Pariseau on the show. But, you know, I don't think Eisenberg is the type of actor that... is watching videos of other people.
No, but like just inspired by. You know what I mean? Like he pulled some of his mannerisms. Look, there's like a couple of YouTube videos where they put them side by side. I'm not saying it's wrong.
It's very funny. I mean, Landis is very much in the conflict world. Well, who knows? You know, that's the beauty of art.
Yeah.
You interpret it any way you want. You know?
No, whatever. I'm probably like, the internet's going to be like, what is this she talking about? But I'm not going to lie. I bit the Kool-Aid on that.
That's pretty funny.
That conspiracy theory.
That's pretty funny. All right, well, listen, let's end it on that if people want to go and check out that. But we can follow you on Twitter at...
Yeah, so you can follow me at Miss Blurdess, but that's MSBLERDESS, Miss Blurdess.
Ms. Blurdess.
Ms. Blurdess.
Okay. And blurred is...
Yeah, it's black nerd. Yeah.
S is the feminine of that.
Yeah, so there you go. And I'm the missus. I married it, basically.
Okay.
I don't know. So, anyway, and then also check out blackgirlnerds.com. We just redid the site, and we've got a lot of great stuff on there. You don't have to be a black or girl, but... You probably would enjoy it more if you're a nerd.
Yeah.
And we do some really great stuff, and I'm really happy to be part of that community.
Well, no, it's important to for a white guy like me to check out those sites because sometimes, how do I say this the right way? I want to say it like, a guy like me can sometimes think that we know what other groups are thinking, and we can be totally off base.
Yeah.
And not out of any malicious intent, just be like, you know, if you don't have that experience, you don't know what the hell some guy's thinking all the time.
Same thing. Yeah. And someone that's in the community, sometimes something that, like, later I'll look at and be like, that was not kosher. When I first look at it, I'm like, I didn't click that in my head originally. And so sometimes it's good to go to the community and see what other people are thinking about it, just so I could be like, oh, maybe I have some blinders on and certain things, you know?
You're never done educating yourself, you know? Yeah. So it's good. We interviewed the four gals who run the podcast called The Women at Warp, which are four different voices. They're all women, but they don't speak in uniform voices. It's four people with four opinions. And their podcast is terrific. Okay. So you should join forces with them at some point.
I gotta check that out. All right.
So that's the scoop. And we've been yapping for a while now. Yeah. So we're gonna beam out of here, and we'll see you all next week.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.